Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Why don't more infant formula companies use organic, grass-fed whole milk instead of skim? Why don't more infant formula companies use the latest breast milk science? Why don't more infant formula companies run their own clinical trials? Why don't more infant formula companies use more of the proteins found in breast milk? Why don't more infant formula companies have their own factories instead of outsourcing their manufacturing? We wondered the same thing. So we made ByHeart, a better formula for formula. Learn more at ByHeart.com.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at UH1.com.
We have merch. Check out the AmericanGlutton.net shop. We've got t-shirts, hoodies, hats, and more. A number of people have come up to me wearing American Glutton merch, and nothing fills my heart with more pride than seeing somebody in one of these t-shirts. And I've been stopped on the street and asked where to get it when somebody sees me in an American Glutton hoodie. Well, you can get it all at the shop on AmericanGlutton.net. And my favorite t-shirt, Yesterday It Was Tomorrow, Right Now, is up now. Get it while supplies last.
Hi, I'm Ethan Suplee. Welcome to American Glutton. Outside of acting, my two favorite things to do are diet and eat. I have a very complicated relationship with food, and on this podcast, we're going to talk about all of it. Food as entertainment. Food as sport. Food as fuel. I'll talk to experts and the average person, just like you and me.
I hate to ask you to do anything, but if you're enjoying the show, please take a moment to like, subscribe, rate, review, all of the above on whatever app you're getting it from. Today on the show, I'm talking to Astrid Naranjo. She is the anti-diet dietitian, and you can find her on Instagram at anti-diet dietitian. Astrid Naranjo, welcome to the American Glutton Podcast.
Thank you so much for having me.
You are the anti-diet dietitian. What does this mean? Let's get into that first. Because does that mean you're body positive? I imagine you are to some degree, but like telling people they should just be happy with themselves. What is the position of the anti-diet dietitian?
You know, it is very interesting because everyone feels like that handle is a little bit of a controversial topic, mostly because I am someone who's very neutral with my approach to body composition, your relationship with food. Like this, you know, that there are just two extremes. Either people completely hate dieting and they have a huge amount of hate towards anyone that wants to lose weight or wants to change the body composition or anything that has to do with tracking, dieting, calorie deficit. So that is one extreme. And we have the other extreme, which is the total opposite. Like if you need to or want to reach your goals, you have to be dieting 24/7 for the rest of your life, and you have to overexercise. You need to track your macros all the time for the rest of your life. Or like if you have some extra body fat, then you are unhealthy. So there is these two extremes, and I find myself kind of like right in the middle, trying to find a happy medium and just put these worlds in a place of peace where you can do both. And there is no need to add that kind of thinking. You have to take a side. And that's where I am coming from. Now, my handle goes more to talk about why I hate aggressive crash dieting. So it's more like that anti-type of dieting that I am against for. And I'm more so all pro for actual sustainable approach where you can do things in a pace that allows you not just to lose body weight and body fat in a way that doesn't feel like you have to make so many sacrifices and so many trade-offs that it becomes unsustainable and you burn out very quickly. But also the fact that the time that you have allowed yourself to do and to transition to become that new you that you're trying to become allows you to get to know more about yourself, helps you to change your behaviors, your habits. Like, there is time for you to experience the journey rather than just going all in, restrict, avoid foods, exercise until you are unable to recover properly. That's where I am coming from, mostly from that anti-diet. And obviously dietitian, because that's my background. I was raised and born in Venezuela, South America, and then I did my bachelor's degree back then, about 14 years ago. And then I moved to Australia about 10 years ago and did a master's degree in dietetics and practice, and did a bit more on behavior change and everything that's related to getting your patient or your client to work with you rather than you prescribing what they need to be doing. So that approach has transform the way I practice for the most part, not just with my online clients, but when I am in the hospital, I am talking with patients in a different way. Some people, even in the hospital, has mentioned, you're so different. Like, there is something that you're doing that is unconventional. Like, it's different when you're trying to work with a patient to find answers to work through their behaviors and the resistance points to actually make them aware that there's something that they can do and go to the other side.
You find with a lot of people, because I've done all the crash diets that were very popular, you know, from the 80s and the 90s and the early 2000s and the mid 2000s even. Do you find that it's hard to kind of talk people out of that? Because I think that people have such an urge to get it done fast. If they've done crash diets in the past, they know, like, I can lose a lot of weight really quickly. And I think for myself, at least, I had built up blinders that I kept repeatedly regaining the weight. I just knew that I could lose weight doing that. So I would go back and do, you know, extremely low calorie diets or liquid diets or something like that, because I knew, like, the only goal, the only idea I had in my head is I just need to lose weight. And I know I can lose weight doing this, so I'm just going to do this again. I wouldn't think really beyond that. Is it hard to convince people to try your approach when I think we do have quite a big population that is in those shoes?
It is very scary if I sit in your shoes to do something that you don't know if it's going to work. And especially if you have a history of dieting and regaining and failing and trying to attempt again, and you have found kind of the only one thing that feels like works for you. But trying to identify what the work for you means, like, is it actually working for you if it's not really allowing you to maintain it forever? So it would be a matter of discussion, or like, how working for you would mean to you. Like, yes, it worked for just a period of time and it did allow you to lose weight and gain some momentum or feel positive about, like, there is hope that I can lose weight. But at the same time, it's not truly working for you if there's a point where you say, I am sick of this. I just don't want to keep doing this anymore because I'm tired of restricting. I am tired of saying no to my friends because I can't eat carbohydrates, or I can't just go out and do anything because there's so many rules and so many points of restriction that doesn't feel like you can actually make that as part of your lifestyle. So yes, any diet can work. And that is a big thing when we're trying to look at, well, what sort of diet approach is best? Like, there is no best diet. There is the one true fact that what works for you, what feels sustainable, what feels like you can put it in place and see yourself doing that for the next 5-10 years. Can you actually do that for that amount of time? And if the answer, an honest answer, is yes, I feel like I definitely can go all the way to 10 years to live the rest of my life doing this, perfect. Then that is the best approach. But for the most part, what we're sold in the fitness industry or just overall around us is this is the diet. You got to do this one because this is going to help you lose 12 pounds in the first 3 weeks. And then you're going to gain momentum. And like, there's a lot of selling points, which I understand why it can help. Obviously, when you're trying to lose weight and you have failed so many times, when you find that one thing that allows you to see the scale drop, but there is nothing else but that only feedback, yeah, you can say, this is working for me. Like the keto diet, it will allow you to lose weight relatively fast, but people don't understand the background of what is happening underneath. Yes, a big of that weight drop, especially in the first few weeks, is glycogen and it's water. This is probably unlikely to be fat unless you are actually in a very true deep deficit. And if you have a lot of weight to lose, you are more likely to lose weight more, much faster at the beginning, because that's why you're truly creating a huge gap between your energy requirements and your energy intake. But that changes as you continue trying to attempt that, and then life gets in the way and things start getting like, oh, I can't do this if I am traveling, or I have my kids' party. Now I can't enjoy this because I can't eat cake. So there are more things that start coming up and you realize, shit, this is not sustainable at all. I won't be able to do this in so many situations that then you start cheating on your diet. That, oh, well, I'm just going to get off the diet today. And then you come back. But then these are slip tops, and then it feels like you always have to cheat on your diet in order to try to fit in things in life. Or the other point is, fuck, I made a huge mistake. I binged, or you got so many urges and cravings because there's so many things that are restricted in the diet that at the end of the day, you lose that willpower of stopping and saying no. And you say, fuck it, I just want to eat this donut, or I want to eat pizza. And then because it's that comes from a scarcity mindset point of view, that you won't be able to have it again because it's a bad food, is restricted, then you want to eat it all. And you feel like there's not going to be a tomorrow. There's not going to be, this is the only day I will be able to eat it. And then that's what happens with that vicious cycle, and why so many people develop binge eating, poor dieting and restricting history, trying to find the one way that will work for them, but it's not truly working for them.
Well, yeah, that was basically my experience with keto. I fully accepted that I was just not going to eat carbohydrates, you know, other than a handful of vegetables for the rest of my life, that they were just going to be off limits and I would lose all the weight I needed to lose. And this was how I was going to live. And what happened every time I did it, I did it a number of times, is I'd get to like 40% of the weight I needed to lose, I'd lose, and it would just stop. I would no longer lose weight. And I would get really meticulous. I would count my carbs. I would be at like 35 grams of carbs per day total, and still no weight loss. And so then I just start restricting food while on keto and just be hungry. And then the weight loss would start again. And it was usually a couple of weeks into that where I was just basically hungry all the time, eating keto, but losing weight, that I would give up and go like, not sustainable. And I wouldn't even binge on carbohydrates. I would just start eating more meat and stop losing weight. It was very, very frustrating because I was totally sold that that diet could get me to my goal, that if I just ate that way, that I would lose all the weight I needed to lose. And it just was not true. So that was super frustrating.
Let me ask you something. When you were doing that, what was the point where you realized this is not the way?
Well, I did it a number of times. I would lose, you know, I had at that point when I started doing keto, when keto came on the scene, I had about 200 pounds to lose, and I would lose like 80 pounds on keto, and then it would just grind, and I'd have 120 pounds left to lose, and I wouldn't be losing weight, and I'd probably squeak out another 20 by making myself hungry by not eating enough. And then I would give up and gain weight. I realized that I was accidentally counting calories, you know, without counting them, that I was doing a calorie conscious version of keto. And when I realized that, I thought like, well, why don't I start making calorie conscious meals that I like that include carbohydrates? And I suddenly felt better in the gym and the weight loss. And, you know, I also had to get okay with weight loss taking a lot longer than I wanted it to take. That was another big thing. Yep. Yeah.
It is huge when you have to realize that the speed that you want to get the weight off is unlikely or unsustainable, especially if there is a lot of weight that you want to get off. But the point is, especially when you're in those sticking points, is when you need the more self-awareness that whatever you're trying to do is going to take time. Like, your body won't change from one version to another version in just a couple of days, because that's not how your physiology or your body works. So even if you starve yourself completely, just water for a few weeks, yes, you will lose weight, but a lot of that will be muscle too. Yeah. So are worth those trade-offs? Do you want to lose weight or do you want to lose fat? So the other point is, and you mentioned that you started feeling much better in the gym. You started feeling much more like, I can work hard in the gym. Like, I can train with more energy. I can feel like a stamina when I'm lifting and hit PRs. Like, those things are so important to deviate your mind from just losing weight. I'm rather trying to start thinking, now I want to get stronger. And by doing other things, by default, sometimes weight loss happens anyway. So it helps to focus on these non-scale related actions and victories that allow you to really hone in what other aspects of my life I want to feel great in.
Yeah.
I want to be good. I'm feeling great when I'm with my kids. I want to feel strong when I'm lifting something or when I'm traveling. I have three different luggages and I can't carry them all. Or if the lift is broken, I can go on the stairs and I feel confident. I feel good. I don't feel like I'm running out of gas. Those things are so important, not just for the sake of living better, but also for your self-esteem and for your own ongoing empowerment that you can do hard things. And those little nuggets of positive wins allow you to continue moving in the right direction. Because sometimes it's not just about the diet. It's about everything.
Yeah.
And whether that everything is allowing you to feel that you can continue doing that in a longer term.
Yeah. Well, another point about, dieting, where this becomes a very tricky trade-off and a tricky sell to people, is that dieting is by definition, you know, restrictive dieting is a limited thing. It's a finite thing. And so there's always that, like that pot of gold at the end of the rainbow where you go, this is going to end and then I'm done, you know? Mm. And really what you're talking about is restructuring somebody's life, which I think is a lot more, you know, to take into account than just like do this thing for 3 months. It's going to be really hard. It's going to suck. Or you're going to take some of the drugs they have nowadays and it's not going to suck, but do this thing for 3 months and then you're done. And then you can go back to living the way you live without putting effort into it versus, you know, you're going to have to make some changes that are kind of permanent changes.
The biggest thing that you said there is I can do this for this amount of time and then I'm done. And that is the worst way to think about it, because how we talked about it, you can lose weight with any diet, with any approach. Like the all diets will work. And there's no actual problem so much with losing the weight is how do you keep it off? And how do you actually maintain it? What is going to be your diet and your lifestyle after that diet? And that is where like 99% of people fail, just because it is not like the end of what you're trying to achieve. That is just the minimum momentum you needed to continue moving in the right direction. And if you don't see yourself in that period behaving and doing the things that you're implementing to lose a weight after, meaning that new version of yourself, that new identity, that I have to become that person that wakes up and trains in the morning or trains during the day three times a week, does resistance training, does their walking, they eat 80-20 rule, 80% of their nutrition is mostly nutrient-dense, nourishing meals. And they also have that allowance to get their 20% of soul foods, foods that they enjoy. Doing all these things, can you envision yourself doing that? Not just now, that you have to obviously include a calorie deficit and you got to be smart about how you implement it so it feels like you can actually maintain that without sacrificing or putting at risk burning out. And then once you get to your goal, well, the only thing that I need to do is increase the volume of food, increase my calories and find my maintenance calories, which, by the way, is not like a specific number. It's a range that is going to always vary depending on your overall lifestyle and physical activity. You don't need to be exercising and running in a treadmill every single day to burn calories. And you don't need to feel like resting days are a no for you. Like, you will get better if you find that happy balance. It's not just about stimulating that hypervigilant, hyperactive state or your sympathetic state, but also allowing your body to rest and stay in this parasympathetic state. When you find a happy balance between these two and you allow yourself to have a much happier life overall, you're fun to speak with and you're fun to live with.
Right. Yeah. I mean, no, I've been on so many diets and put my family, my family was miserable when I would go on a diet because I wasn't fun to be around, you know, for the most part. Mm. And now it really takes a couple of months of serious dieting to get me deep into that kind of black hole where I'm thinking about food all the time. And then I go on to maintenance and chill out and get my hormones back in line. And then I can diet again if I need to. But yeah, the constant battle, you know, I think that's something that we're often unaware of, because a lot of the times I would rationalize this by saying, I'm doing this for my family. Like the goal is to get my body to a place where I can participate with my family more. And yet I'm just kind of on this cycle of miserable dieting, so I'm not fun to be around, and then almost manically gaining weight again, which is also not fun to see. And so I think that that's stressful, or was very stressful to my wife and children for a long time.
When you were able to lose a decent amount of weight, you felt, I am happy with the amount that I've lost. Were you trying to include or work on other aspects of your mindset to be able to make it work?
I am today, and I have been for the last couple of years, but for the first 15 years of dieting, I was not. I wasn't thinking about it in those terms at all. You know, I'm also a sober person. So for the longest time, I did think about my sobriety in those terms. Like I was abstinent from drugs and alcohol, and I needed to actively work on myself so that I wasn't going crazy. And I did not apply this to food for a long time. I don't know why. I just thought I could beat food by losing weight, you know? And so I would do these really kind of ridiculous extreme diets, and I would adhere to them religiously to the point where I was miserable, you know, not fun to be around for the most part. And then they would end. And during that time, I wasn't, you know, there was no introspection on my behavior at all. There was no like self-work basically at all. It was just, I considered it to be a very strictly physical thing. And now I kind of am attacking it in a different way.
What are you doing now that feels different to before?
Now I'm much more interested in my behavior, in the way I act and interact with things, in the way I use things, and in I find that a lot of my urge to eat comes from anxiety or anxiousness, mm-hmm. or a dissatisfaction with the present time circumstances, whatever that means. And so I will go to food to feel better mentally. I don't do that anymore. Like that's a very off limits to me. So I am constantly questioning, am I hungry? And what am I going to get out of the food that I'm going to eat right now? Is this strictly for pleasure, or is this escapism, or is this because I'm nervous in around a group of people I don't know, or am I bored and watching TV? So those are the questions I'm constantly asking, because I want my behavior with food to be very different. And the other thing that I don't do ever now is I don't eat in secret. I used to not like people to see me eating, and I would find it much easier to binge eat if I was alone and there was no prying eyes around regulating me. And so I don't eat in secret at all anymore. That's the, you know, look, I'm home alone right now, and my wife is not here, and none of my kids are here. I'm going to eat lunch by myself, but it's a different set of circumstances where I'm not doing it secretively.
I totally agree. Those points are so commonly to trigger overeating or binge eating. And the biggest one that you mentioned is emotional eating that relies on just food in order to escape from an uncomfortable emotion, an uncomfortable situation. And it kind of feels like food is the only way to escape, because that's what you learn. That was your only solution. That's the only thing that you thought would be useful in order to feel better. But when you start learning about interoceptive awareness and more about yourself, and start asking yourself those questions, kind of becoming your own therapist at some point. And you like, what is going on with you? Like, why are you anxious? What specifically is making you anxious? So you start running through questions like, is this worth worrying about in the first place? Or am I making this 10 times what it is? And I'm just overthinking things. Potentially, again, 80 to 90% of the time, we overthink and make things overcomplicated from what they are. And sometimes, obviously, we are scared of what can be on the other side if it's something unknown that we haven't experienced before. And we don't know what the other side looks like. So it is just like catastrophizing and thinking these different scenarios. And most times, the worst scenarios are the ones that trigger us to try to binge or escape or emotionally eat. But when you start asking yourself in the question and these questions, when you're in that specific moment, that gives you so much more power and allows you to answer your questions. Well, I don't think it's going to be that bad, but I'm not, I don't know. I'm scared. Why are you scared? What are you scared of? Well, I'm scared of failing. I'm scared of someone thinking that I'm not good enough. Okay, but is that person important in the first place? Do you care if they think they will think anything about you anyway? People think shit about us anyway. So why are you trying to fit in? Then you start thinking about, well, because when I was a kid, I always was expected to be the best one. I was expected to do the things right. Otherwise, I would not get my mom's attention. I was a neglected kid, or my mom was emotionally unavailable. So I needed to do things to fit in or to grab her attention. So a lot of our behaviors without knowing could be coming from our childhood and from potential traumatic experiences while growing up. Like, I used to have a lot of rejection during my while I was growing up. Like in school, I had a really, really good best friend, and suddenly she stopped talking to me and I had no idea why. And that was a huge rejection. And then another thing happened that I was left like, what did I do? Like, there was no explanation. So it was always that fear of rejection that started building up to a point where I always felt scared of not fitting in, or that anytime I would be abandoned or left out. And those kind of behaviors start overriding certain actions. So then you take things up personal, you become overprotective of certain things, so you start becoming super robotic and you don't trust anyone. Or you can become on the other way, trying to be people pleaser to a point that it consumes you so much that it burns you out. And sometimes the only escape is, fuck it, I just need to find something that makes me feel better, and you end up being. So all these long-winded conversation around the behaviors and our bringing is that emotional eating is a huge thing that I find that probably most of us struggle with. Now, some are able to develop this interoceptive awareness and get to a point where I can master this situation much, much better by understanding why am I feeling this way and what can I do about it. Can I actually change the root cause of what is driving this issue in the first place? Am I worried? Am I stressed? Am I sad? What is the root cause of this feeling, this emotion? And try to see if actually doing something about it can change the...
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. Hello? Fresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do it. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us.
MintMobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 5/31/24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Outcome. And if that happens, then you feel better about it because you actually did attack the root cause of what was making you feel bad or uncomfortable, and you changed the outcome, and now you feel better. But if you can't do anything about it, let's say it's totally out of your control, then finding other ways that are not food related that allow you to feel better or distract your mind. Because sometimes it's just more finding a way that allows you to stop ruminating about certain things, and distraction or doing things that are not necessarily food related will allow you to let that worry and that urge pass. So maybe it's reading a book, maybe it's running, maybe it's going for a walk, maybe it's talking to someone, maybe it's just speaking out loud your thoughts and hearing yourself speaking. And like, I sound so silly when I repeat these certain things to myself, but I need to hear them, because when you just say it in your head, you don't listen. It's weird, but what do you have to say?
do you find that should be done before somebody attempts dieting, or before somebody attempts like the actual physical act of restructuring how they eat? Do you think that kind of introspection comes first?
I believe it depends on the degree as to how bad is this emotional eating or the body dissatisfaction, or what are the root causes of what is making you so emotionally vulnerable. And if that is not addressed, obviously things are going to continue falling into the same pattern and vicious cycle. But I've seen a lot of clients be successful trying to attempt something that is less aggressive, is much more doable, and it doesn't feel that is adding additional stress, and allows them to work at the same time on their behaviors and their emotions, and put it into practice or into test. What is going on? Why am I feeling this? How can I do better? And start implementing mindful eating, interoceptive awareness, questioning yourself. And that can work. But I have also seen that some people, they just need to work on their mindset first, and their relationship with food, before they even try to do anything else. So especially for those that have been chronically dieting for so long, and they continue regaining and losing, the problem is not the diet. And you will see that there's something else that they have not been able to address that has to be addressed if they actually want to break that barrier or that point where they get stuck again. And it's likely nothing to do with diet. Obviously, losing fat and losing weight comes to energy balance, but things are a bit more complex than that. So when you think about the human psychology and their behaviors and emotions, that is going to go way, way deeper than just trying to create a calorie deficit. Because yes, you can create a calorie deficit, but we're not so simple. We're human, emotional human beings. and emotions are going to play a huge role in our adherence or our capacity to adhere to something. So if you're someone who struggles with emotional eating or with anxiety, depression, stress, or whatever emotion you feel like you tend to gravitate towards when something is wrong, that is going to hold you back because that will affect your adherence. So you'll binge one day and then, well, okay, I'll restrict. And then you'll binge again and then you'll restrict. So you'll see these peaks and yo-yoing again and again, getting back on track and just dieting again. And nothing is really changing because the behaviors and the mindset is still the same. So until you're able to turn that around, focus, okay, I just can't diet right now if I'm going to keep doing the same thing. What can I do to address this first? Maybe it's just stop dieting and just focusing. Maintaining is a legit option to do as well. Like if you can just maintain your weight, wherever you're at your point in your journey, that's totally fine. You don't have to lose weight forever. I know you can and you want to lose more body fat, but you have more time to do it. So, but if something is not working, you gotta pay attention to the one thing that could be potentially holding you back. And that could be just needing to learn the skill on how to address better your emotional eating. And then things are going to be much, much smoother as you move along with those skills.
Yeah. You had mentioned earlier 80-20, and this is something we've heard a lot in, you know, when talking about diets and weight loss and stuff. Do you think there is a period of time where stricter adherence is necessary, or do you think that from day one, or does this vary case to case? Because I know for a long time, 80-20, I wouldn't stay on a diet because the minute I start tapping into that 20, it's very, very difficult for me to get back to the 80. Now I find it to be quite a bit easier. If I go out to eat with my family and have a bite of dessert and maybe a piece of pizza, the next day it's not impossible for me to get back onto my plan. But there was a time where that bite of dessert or that piece of pizza would have led me to binge eating all night long, and then it would have been unheard of to get back onto my diet the next day.
I like your question because it's a little bit nuanced in terms of if I struggle with stopping myself because of something, one thing that is going to come out of that is that you have been restricting that food so long perhaps that when you have it, it's like I need to eat it all. I can't stop myself from eating it. Or because your diet overall is so strict and so boring, when you allow some extra pleasure, that extra dopamine release, like tasty food, it is really hard to stop. But with my experience overall, definitely is depending on where you're at in your journey, and again, how is your dieting history? That is going to be a very good predictor of whether you will be able to handle that 80-20 rule a bit more balanced and without going overboard or feeling like you're losing control when you tap into that 20%. One thing that I like doing with some people, some clients, is allow yourself to have a piece of chocolate or a piece of food that you have always thought it was a bad food every day. That way, the main thing of that exercise is not to get you to feel like you have to do or eat chocolate every day. But the point is to make something that has been put into a pedestal of this is prohibited, this is a bad food, and I only get to eat it when I am going out or when it's a special occasion, but otherwise it is a no-go. So when you know that now it is something that you can eat every day, like sometimes it's like, do I really want it? Like it's there. It's like I always like using this example of getting or going out with someone that you just met, and there is like this huge passion, and you know, you just want to see them all the time, and you just want to devour them, and you know, all things crazy happen. But you know that you may not see him in a week or 2 weeks. It's just like that dating stage. Same happens when you are eating something that you can't have all the time, because it's something that is there. Like, oh my God, chocolate. I just can't wait to have it in the weekend because that's the only time that I can have it. Same happens when you get married. Now you have the desserts or like that every single day. It's there. It doesn't change the taste. It doesn't stop being special, but because it's more normalized, then that passion, that desire is much more milder, and it feels like you could have it anytime. You can hug your wife every day. You can do whatever you want together every single day if you wanted to. But you sometimes decide like, hey, this is not the right time. We do it tomorrow. Or hey, this do that in the next 2 days, but I don't feel like doing this today. Same happens with food and how your relationship with food and certain unattainable foods change in the perspective of when you marry these foods, like they are there all the time. They don't stop being super delicious and tasty, but they become more accessible. And then it's up to you to say, do I really want it today? Maybe tomorrow. And maybe tomorrow you come and see it again and like, you know, I prefer my stir fry and my vegetables today. I'm not really into this, especially if you're very in tune with your goals and you know what you want to achieve, or if you want to maintain a certain physique. It's more like you have unconditional permission to have anything, but it's more up to you to choose and decide whether something aligns with it in an ongoing basis, or you decide not to. But it's you choosing, not someone telling or a rule prohibiting that you can't do this because otherwise you won't be able to lose weight. Like, there are people losing weight just eating Twinkies. Mm-hmm. Like, if you can eat Twinkies and lose weight, there's nothing wrong with eating certain bad foods. It's just knowing and improving that relationship with that specific food and changing that narrative around it.
But if your thing is binge eating, that's harder to fit into the 80-20 box. You wouldn't say, mm-hmm. like, yes, 20% of the time you can binge eat. That no longer...
Correct.
Right.
Correct.
Yeah. 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 See, for me... Like, as you were giving all those analogies and stories, I'm sitting here going like, yeah, I guess I could squeeze a Big Mac into my calories. I know, yeah. I would be hungrier sooner afterwards, or at the end of the day, I would be hungrier because that food is not super satisfying or not super long term. And then as I thought about it further, I was like, I never wanted a Big Mac. I wanted three Big Macs. I wanted three Big Macs and chicken nuggets and a fillet of fish and an order of fries and an ice cream. You know, it wasn't just having a Big Mac. It wasn't just having one square of chocolate for me. It was eating to the point that I couldn't eat anymore, which gave me pleasure for a long time. So I think if you're getting that under control, yeah, the rest of it doesn't matter. I think I personally, at the beginning of a diet, would try to stay away from foods like Big Mac, simply because I think I would get hungrier, and it would be very difficult for me to go to McDonald's and just order a Big Mac or order a cheeseburger. It's so small. But that's just me. But I get what you're saying, and I appreciate that, you know.
I totally get what you're saying too. And what I was saying at a point that there are people that, for them to prioritize their goals, they have to be more strict than that. And that is okay. Like, I am just looking for the average person that doesn't struggle with binge eating or to the point of extreme hunger would be able to work with and to learn. Now, when we're thinking about people with huge appetites, and like I am someone who I'm always hungry. I like eating a lot of food, like volume food. Like if I don't see four plates in front of me, I just like, I can't go to restaurants that have this tiny little thing. Like I need to eat like 50 plates like that in order to feel full. So I get what you're saying, and I definitely understand and sympathize with the point of needing to know when it's appropriate to be a bit more stricter than that. But you decided because you're okay with that.
Right.
But it's your choice again. It's not someone or something of making you do this or stopping from eating this. You still have in your mind the option to say, I could have it if I wanted to, but I decide not to because I am not going to feel satisfied with just one burger. I need four. But because it's not satiating, I prefer to not eat it at all. So I don't have to struggle with that. I do the same when I think about, I don't know, cookies. I can't eat just one cookie. Or when I am thinking about cereal, I have to eat the whole packet. I can't eat just one serving.
Yeah, God, for a serving of, it's like a quarter of a cup. It's nothing. It's two tablespoons of cereal.
Exactly. So I say, look, I just won't have it, but it's my choice. But if I do want to at some point, I say, fuck it, I'm going to eat it, I'm going to enjoy it, and I eat my entire box of cereal, and I'm so happy, but it's my choice. It's not like the scarcity mindset of I can't have this anymore is overriding the power of my choosing to eat it. It's more like I am going to allow myself to, today, I'm just going to eat 3 burgers today. And I'm okay with that. But you are choosing to do that. You know what I mean?
I do because because I wouldn't choose to do it. That's the problem. If I'm doing it from a point of like rationale, I'm not going to do it. And if I, it's kind of, there's a sub-level where I'm doing it and I'm not choosing to do it, you know, where some other mechanism in my mind has taken over and mm-hmm. said, you need this so bad that you're going to like block out everything else and you're going to go and do this thing. But there's nothing in me that, and I haven't really dealt with this hands-on recently because I've been working on this for so long, but I can remember, you know, going, I'm gonna take a different route home to avoid fast food. And then I find myself in the drive-through to get fast food. And I think I'm not gonna eat it. They're gonna give me the bag and I'm gonna throw it away. And then I find myself like putting my face in the bag just to smell it. And then I'm thinking, I'm not gonna eat it, I'll just smell it. And then I've eaten it, you know, and none of it was really a decision that was being made by the part of me that could sit down and go like, what is this food going to do for me? And do I want that? And, you know, it wasn't really in the kind of awareness level of making a decision.
Do you ever think about how are you going to feel after you have eaten that?
I do now. Like, yes, very much so now. I find myself almost only experiencing that when I'm traveling, right? Because when I'm home, I have my life dialed in and I'm never faced with that decision. Once in a while, we'll go out to dinner somewhere and I'll find myself looking at a menu where there aren't great choices for me. Everything's breaded or fried or pizza or this or that. And in that situation, I am trying to make what's a pizza going to do for me? Do I want to eat that? Am I going to feel good after? You know, so I'm trying to make those decisions. But if I find myself in a strange place that I'm not familiar with and I get hungry and I'm have limited options, I am trying to think with what you're talking about, which is to make a decision based on how's it going to make me feel after I eat it? How's it going to make me feel tomorrow? You know, how much of this do I need to eat to get a meal in? You know, they're rather than just like, well, I'm here and there aren't great options. So now I'm going to choose the worst one. Now I'm going to turn off my cognitive mind and just go for what's going to anesthetize me.
The point that I think it is so important, especially that you highlight it when you are traveling, when you're doing something that is out of your routine, is to always try to be as prepared as you can. And this is one thing that determines whether you can be quite dialed in and successful on these specific situations that are totally out of your routine, like traveling. Like, how much can you plan and what can be under your control when it comes to food? So you are not paying a higher price in the sense that you can be in more control and don't feel like everything is going to go out of the window. So one thing that I find that is very helpful if you're traveling is make sure you can have with you in your backpack or whatever things that you know that you can eat on the go. That you don't allow yourself to be so ravenously hungry that when you are in a restaurant, you are so miserable that whatever you're going to eat is just going to drive this out of behavior that has nothing to do with your cognizant behavior. The other point, it would be more about, can you choose where to eat if it's in your power? If this, that's possible, then that allows you to study a bit more what the menu would look like, what you could potentially order that is going to make you feel satiated. But leading up to heading or going to that place, the restaurant, don't go starving. Because if you go hungry, that is going to set you up for failure. So one thing that I always encourage my clients and everyone that struggles with that, especially traveling, think about what is the outcome you want to get out of that event or going into a restaurant. Is it about a work meeting type thing? Is it a work relationship? Is it about making memories with your family, spend some quality time? So what is the role of food in that situation? And whether eating or not eating or putting a lot of attention on the food will make things better or may not allow you to leave the or fulfill the entire experience that you want to get of that specific situation. So if I'm going to for a work meeting and food is there, what is the outcome of that event? The work meeting. It's not the food. Food is there just to be part of. Just some appetizers, entertaining, but it's not the outcome that you're going for. Now, you're going with your kids to go to McDonald's and then there's ice cream. What is the outcome of that? Spending time with your kids and maybe having and tasting some of those foods. But what is the specific outcome that you want to get from that? Is it the action food? Is it the kids? And the experience that you want to live with them. So when your attention to what you want to get out of those situations is dialed in into this, the specific outcome or what I want from this, allows you to be more dialed in into.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Why don't more infant formula companies use organic, grass-fed whole milk instead of skim?
Why don't more infant formula companies use the latest breast milk science? Why don't more infant formula companies run their own clinical trials? Why don't more infant formula companies use more of the proteins found in breast milk? Why don't more infant formula companies have their own factories instead of outsourcing their manufacturing? We wondered the same thing. So we made ByHeart, a better formula for formula. Learn more at ByHeart.com.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
I can just ignore, in the sense that you don't have to make food as a huge priority, and you can perhaps have something else before you go, so you're not hungry or you're not just food focused. I'm not saying to not enjoy the foods that you go, that when you go in a restaurant, you try them and you, but because hunger is not present, then you're just choosing to taste things here and there, but you're satisfied already. You come from a place where if I eat something, I'm going to eat it because I want to give myself the treat of trying and tasting, but not because I'm hungry. Because the problem is when you are hungry, the only thing that is in your head is, I just want to eat until I'm sickly full, until I'm just like, I need to eat so much. And I understand you because I am exactly the same. But when I change my perspective, I'm like, okay, this is a meeting. Oh, this is something I am going to meet with my brother I haven't seen in 5-7 years. I want to spend time with him. I want to laugh. I want to create memories. Food is there, absolutely. But I'm not going to just be focused on the food. I am going to enjoy some of that, but my attention and my focus is on the person. So I somehow, in my mind, I go, okay, this is what I want to get of that situation. And for that reason, sometimes I am not going to go hungry. Let me have something before I eat a sandwich or something that I know will fill me up and will reduce my hunger levels from 9 to 5. So, okay, I can eat something I enjoy here and there, but the food is not going to drive me crazy to a point that I am just binging and eating and like, okay, fuck everyone. I don't care.
Yeah. Yeah. Astrid, this has been amazing. Thank you so much.
It's been my pleasure, and I hope you could get some, I don't know, enjoy it, and there was something that you can take away from this.
I think so. I think it's been a very productive conversation. Thank you.
Thank you so much for everything. Well.
And now for the Q&A.
Hello. Here's a question from Rob.
Hi, Rob.
Rob says, longtime fan and just started listening to the podcast. He says,
longtime fan, first time listener.
First time listener. He says,
glad to have you, Rob.
Yeah. I, too, have struggled with my weight. I relate to what you have to say about your relationship with food, particularly your all or nothing attitude when it comes to your diet. I can go a while, and then if I slip, it's too easy to keep falling back into overeating. He's from northern Minnesota. He says, because of the past, well, okay, sorry. He says, now I'm going to pronounce this incorrectly and I feel terrible, but it's OJIBWE. I'm an Ojibwe. Is that right? Now I feel like, I mean, we need to do this one again so I can like learn this correctly and not butcher. But
no,
he goes,
Rob will hear you butcher his heritage.
Oh, gosh. Okay. He says, I'm an Ojibwe, which is spelled OJIBWE. And I genuinely apologize if I didn't pronounce that correctly.
I think it sounds like Ojibwe in my head.
Okay, great. He's from northern Minnesota. And the reason he points that out is he says, because in the past and in our hunter-gatherer economy in former times, often it was literally feast or famine.
Yeah.
A lot of our ceremony and rites of passage, sometimes things as simple as praying, have a food component. I struggle with keeping consistent and not losing control at our bigger feasts. How do you take the beast? Maybe he means tame, but how do you tame the beast in any type of social situation? I get what he's asking. And that's,
No, I understand totally. I try to set, thanks for the question. I try to set guardrails. I find that I will eat out of anxiety, and any kind of, for me, public settings with a lot of people give me anxiety. And fuck, man, like just being at dinner with people and being in the presence of people who are doing something like eating and not doing it, even that gives me anxiety and makes me want to eat. And like, I'm a really fast eater. So when I finish my food and then people are like my wife's sister is the slowest eater on earth. So going to lunch with her, I'm maybe done with my food before she's taken her first bite. And that's not even really an exaggeration. Like she will talk and look at her food and cut a piece and then talk. And I'm like blowing through mine. And then I have this thing of like, well, it's rude to let people eat alone. So now I have to order something else. So like there's a lot that goes into it. And we also have, you know, all the stupid traditions. I'm not calling your tradition stupid, but I do think of my traditions as stupid, where they're all centered around food. I completely understand if you come from a group of people that were hunters and gatherers really not that long ago, and you're trying to uphold those traditions, and the celebration is literally based around food. Like we caught a big animal and we're going to have a celebration about this. I get that. Or the harvest came in and we're going to celebrate it. Mine seem to be like just ways to get kids to eat chocolate and buy turkeys.
Yeah.
You know, and so these food centric celebrations, I try to put up some guardrails. So the biggest one for me is just not overeating. And that's tough, because that's exactly what he's talking about. So I think just white knuckling that idea, I'm not going to overeat, I'm not going to overeat, I'm not going to overeat, that's maybe not going to bring him success. But like, are there other active things you could do? Could you eat, like if it's the types of food, are there any limitations on types of food that you could set? I don't know what that celebration looks like at all, or what the types of foods are, but like, I know I've gone like, well, you know, for Christmas sometimes, well, I'm just going to eat the meat. I'm not going to eat all the other stuff that's served, the stuffing and potatoes and, you know, desserts. And even if I overeat the meat a little bit, I feel better the next day than if I'd eaten all the other stuff. On Thanksgiving, I can overeat the shit out of turkey and feel great the next day. I get pretty sleepy that night, but mm-hmm. I feel pretty good the next day, and have just like little tastes of stuff, but limit it to, I'm going to take one small spoon of stuffing, and when that's done, I'm not going back for more. Really, I do try to work mostly on not overeating, not snacking at all. I'm going to have what's on my plate and that's it. And then trying to be up and on my feet and active and doing anything else I can that does not involve eating food. So I would suggest looking for, are there games that are played? Are there people to talk to? Are there, you know, anything active? You know, I even like to this idea where, you know, a big part of recovery with sobriety is being of service. And a lot of that is like, I'm going to go to this meeting and set up, and then I'm going to help put everything away, fold up the chairs, clean up the space, just anything like that. Like doing dishes for me has become something that I go to simply because it keeps me away from the food. And there's always an excess of dirty dishes around the holidays at my house. And so like anytime I can break away and go do dishes. Those are some of the ways that I work on these traps of gluttony.
That makes perfect sense. And I personally appreciate that answer as well. I think this is something that no matter what your heritage or traditions are, we all have some version of this. So that's, yeah, it's super helpful. And I apologize again, Rob, if I did not say your heritage name correctly. I am now genuinely curious and want to check it out. Thank you for the question. Do let us know any success you have. And if anybody else has a question, you can email it. Ethan will answer it. It's hello@americanglutton.net.
Thanks for listening to this episode of American Glutton. I'm Ethan Suplee. You can follow us on Instagram @American Glutton Podcast. Sincerely.